The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Our creators endowed us with the right to life, and yet millions of children lose their right to life every year because of abortion. In Texas, we work to save those lives. And that's exactly what the Texas legislature did this session. They worked together on a bipartisan basis to pass a bill that I'm about to sign that ensures that the life of every unborn child who has a heartbeat will be saved from the ravages of abortion.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Texas Governor Greg Abbott. That was back in May. He signed a bill into law that bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected as early as 6 weeks. The Texas, of course, Heartbeat Act, SB 8, put Texas in line with more than a dozen other states that ban abortions. I think there's 12 of them. This takes effect September 1st. Big, big news, right? As of today. And I just want to say, look, Mike Pence said it best a couple years ago when he was at the March for Life. He said, life is winning. And I want to re-echo that. Life is winning. We are on the winning side of this battle. You know, as Kevin Turley, my last guest pointed out, you know, Humani Vitti comes at 68, Rosemary's Baby, the same year. And you take a look at what these films represent. You know, you take a look at what the document represented and what the culture of death was putting forth. You know, we are in a battle between the forces of good and evil. We're in a battle between the forces of life and death. But today in the great state of Texas, the Lone Star State, if I can get it out of my mouth, say that three times fast, an abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy is illegal. I mean, this is the first time ever, just to put this in perspective, that a state has been able to impose a significant restriction on abortion without a court telling them you can't do it. Right? Look, lives are going to be saved because of this. And the media is going crazy. People are going crazy. They can't believe this is taking place. And what's unique about Texas, what's unique about this law, is that there are no criminal penalties. There's zero criminal penalties for doing this. Instead, it allows people to bring a lawsuit against those who help a pregnant mother get abortion, whether that's the boyfriend or the parents, or the person who brought the mother to the clinic, or the clinic itself. It allows for a minimum award of about $10,000. That'll be paid to the person bringing the suit with no maximum limit. So the person doesn't have to have any relationship to the woman in order to sue. So this is so different. It is so, so different. I want to talk about it. I really do. And I'd love to have your input on it as well. One final thought here, and we'll get the insight of an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He's a research associate at Bush School at the Catholic University of America as well. Michael News joining me. But the Supreme Court last night issued a stay on the implementation of this law, a desperate last-ditch move by its opponents. Earlier today on Morning Air, Sean Carney, who is the founder of 40 Days for Life, he spoke with John Morales. And the thing about Sean Carney and 40 Days for Life, I think these guys are so unbelievably on point with what they're doing. We're seeing more conversions, more lives saved, more clinic workers leaving, more abortionists abandoning, you know, that altar of death, right? Why? Because they're engaging this spiritually. They are engaging it with prayer and with fasting. 40 days of prayer and fasting. That's what it's going to take. Abortion in this country is going to fall, and you are on the advent of it. You are going to witness this. This is a hallmark moment for our great nation. You know, think back to the 1860s when slavery was underway. Can you imagine being those who championed freedom for those who were oppressed? If you're on the side of life, if you are on the side of life, I guarantee you, you're going to see it. And everything you've done to advance the culture of life, you can stand tall. You know, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. My guest, Michael New, joins me today. Well, before I go to Michael, let's play Sean Carney. Here's what he had to say a little bit earlier with John Morales.
The heartbeat bill starts today, September 1st, and they declined it. And I was really surprised. The Supreme Court has become very unpredictable the last, 6 months. And it's very telling. I think it's a good sign as they take up the Dobbs case in October, which has the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade.
So let me bring in Michael New to the conversation. I said associate scholar at the Charlotte Loser Institute. Follow him at Michael J. New on Twitter. Michael, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Big day, huh? I mean, it's great news. I'm very excited about it. A lot to get into with you. Give me your take on what just went down.
Today is a terrific day. That unborn children in Texas, many of them are legally protected. This is really the first time since Roe v. Wade we've really been able to protect a significant number of unborn children legally. That is a great cause for celebration, that now unborn children are protected from the very first heartbeat that typically occurs around 6 weeks gestation. Texas has a pretty low abortion rate, but it's a big state. Tragically, about 50,000 abortions take place in Texas every year. The most recent data from the CDC we have indicates that about 33,000 or so take place after 7 weeks gestation. So those are all unborn children who are legally protected. By some media reports, this law would protect about 85% of unborn children who might otherwise be aborted. So this law really does protect a lot of unborn children. It will stop abortions. It will build a culture of life. And this is a great reason for pro-lifers to celebrate.
Yeah, the media is going crazy over this. People cannot believe it. I mean, they're angry. They're upset. They call this an injustice. In fact, I had a colleague, and I want to thank, I guess it was John Harper, a former colleague of mine here at Relevant Radio, and he sent me over a, I guess it was a press release today from the White House, and the Biden administration is not happy with this either. Did you get to see what they issued? I'm trying to look for it here in front of me here. Here's the White House statement on this decision. Let me see if I can open it while we're talking here. I don't have it in front of me. Here it goes. Today, Texas law SB 8 went into effect. This extreme Texas law blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade and upheld as a precedent for nearly a half a century. The Texas law will significantly impair women's access to health care that they need, particularly for communities of color and individuals of low income. And outrageously, it deputizes private citizens to bring lawsuits against anyone who believe has helped another person get an abortion. And they go on. He goes, my administration is deeply committed to the constitutional right established in Roe v. Wade 5 decades ago and will protect and defend that right. They're more concerned about protecting and defending the right to terminate an innocent child, a fellow citizen in the womb, than they are protecting that particular citizen. What do you make of the White House and the Biden administration? And I say shame on them for this statement. I'd love your take.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, Joe Biden is someone who supports legal abortion. Planned Parenthood and other groups really put a lot of money into his campaign. And he's become, frankly, more radical on this issue. You know, at one point when he was a senator, he supported the Hyde Amendment. Now he opposes the Hyde Amendment. So not only does Joe Biden think abortion should be legal, but he thinks it all should be paid for with your taxpayer dollars. But this is just, you know, posturing. I mean, the Supreme Court, this case was appealed. The Supreme Court could have taken action. They declined to do so. The law is currently in effect. I think legal battles will still be ongoing. I don't think this is a settled matter yet. But as it currently stands, you know, unborn children in Texas after 6 weeks gestation are legally protected. And, you know, frankly, there's not much that Joe Biden can do about that. You know, pro-lifers want a big victory here. We have a federalism system that allows states to do things like this. And, again, this is just posturing on the part of our president.
Bravo, Governor Abbott. My hat off to you, sir. Thank you very much. To your point there about the Supreme Court, you know, why did the Fifth Circuit and the Supreme Court not block this? I mean, what's behind that?
Well, I mean, the Fifth Circuit is thought to be a conservative circuit, and they do tend to have a track record of upholding different kinds of pro-life laws. So this case did go through the Fifth Circuit, which I think helped. And the Supreme Court, I think we're just benefiting from the fact that the composition of the court has really changed, that President Trump got to appoint 3 new judges. He appointed Amy Coney Barrett, he appointed Neil Gorsuch, and he appointed Brett Kavanaugh. These are all judges who are conservative and who are certainly abortion skeptical. I mean, I don't know what exactly is running through their mind when they review every last case that's appealed, but I think the composition of the Supreme Court certainly helped us here. Again, the legal battles probably are not over, but for the time being, this law is in effect, and many unborn children in Texas are being protected.
You know, I only have a few moments with you today, and there's so much to talk about here. There's legislation going through the State House right now that would impact abortion pills. Are you familiar with what's going on there? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very, I'm very glad the Texas, obviously the heartbeat bill is getting a lot of attention today, but the Texas State Legislature did something very important this week. They did pass a bill putting some common sense protections on women using chemical abortion drugs. We've seen a real increase in chemical abortions in Texas. They've gone up by about 70% over the past 3 years. So this bill would do a couple things. It would basically say that only women can obtain chemical abortion drugs or only use them after 10 weeks gestation. Previously, the limit was 7 weeks. So we know that when women take these chemical abortion drugs later in gestation, that increases health risks. Yep. It also made it illegal to obtain chemical abortion drugs or send these abortion drugs through the mail. So it really tries to make it clear that if women do obtain chemical abortions, they have to do so with medical supervision. And that's very important, that if a woman has an ectopic pregnancy and she obtains a chemical abortion, that can be fatal.
Wow.
If a woman's later gestation, she realizes, and gets a chemical abortion, that could pose serious health risks. So by putting some limits on chemical abortions, the Texas State Legislature really did well looking out for the health of women and trying to protect preborn children.
Michael, I know that you are writing a lot about this. Charlotte Lowe's, you're doing some great work. How can people follow you or your work, or how can they get up to speed on this? There's so many nuances to all this. There's a lot to absorb in such a little bit of time. So what's a good resource?
Best way to reach out to me is through Twitter. I can be followed on Twitter at Michael_J_New. That's at Michael_J_New, N-E-W. I have commentary analysis on pro-life issues almost every day, so please give me a follow.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, before I let you go, final thought here. I'm just curious. Will we see a case that will come before the court that will eventually overturn Roe?
I think eventually we will. It may not come down one fell swoop, but I do think the Supreme Court's going to let states do more and more to protect preborn children. Yeah. So I think there's lots of reasons for optimism. But pro-lifers, we have to do our job too. We have to pray, sidewalk counsel, help a pregnancy center in Texas. I made a donation yesterday. I encourage your listeners to do the same. We still have our work cut out for us, but we're on the right side.
I love it. My thanks to Michael New. Check him out, okay? His Twitter handle is at Michael_J_New. And, of course, check out the Charlotte Lozier Institute as well. Short pause when we come back. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. I've got a lot to share with you. We'll take a look at Afghanistan and much, much more. Don't go away. Feel free to join the conversation, too. Here's something for your speed dial, right? 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Use it. We'll talk right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, yesterday the president address the nation. I don't know whether you caught it. Maybe you caught a few snippets of it in, some news pieces a little bit later. But he's come under incredible fire, right, because of how we evacuated our citizens and those who helped us from Afghanistan. Of course, he said yesterday in his press conference, he left, we got 90% of the people out, leaving, simple math, that means 10% were left behind, enemy lines. But then the White House came out the next day. Oh, no, he misspoke. It's 98%, I have a real problem with us leaving, 1.0001% of our citizens behind the line. I mean, we should leave 0% behind the lines. But he addressed the nation because I think he's really coming under a lot of fire. He can't believe this. He was going to be the president who ended the war in Afghanistan, and it was going to be a great thing for his legacy. And now people are saying, what a debacle, right? What a debacle. So he defended his actions. Some said he was kind of angry. He made the claim that this was an extraordinary success. How can you get behind a microphone and say this is an extraordinary success? I don't know what he was trying to do in that speech because everyone has seen what's going on. And anyone who thinks that was a successful withdrawal on any level, I think they need to be reevaluated. I really do. That was not a successful withdrawal. Right now, there are still Americans that are stranded. I heard a story before coming into the broadcast here of a 3-year-old, a child. The administration claimed that we got tens of thousands of Afghan helpers out of the country. NBC reported that only about 8,500 of them were taken out of the country, but the estimates are that, you know, there are 70,000 of these helpers and their immediate families who were given special visas to get out. So, you know, we're only looking at 8% of them getting out. And, of course, the president came out very adamant, right? He was very direct and we gave them, you know, 19 different attempts. We told them 19 different occasions. That might be true. That might very well be true. But look, when you got Taliban at your checkpoints and they're blackmailing, bribing people, $1,500, you know, they're tearing up passports and documents when there are, suicide bombers setting off bombs and you got family and children with you, it makes it kind of difficult to get through a closed gate, right? It does. It does. What's really embarrassing for the administration is that there's something called Operation Pineapple Express going on. Have you heard about this, Operation Pineapple Express? It's being conducted by a group of retired Special Force guys. I love it. Go Special Forces. I love these. These are veterans, right? These guys are retired Special Forces who are in Afghanistan behind enemy lines. They're working on getting the remaining Americans and the people who helped our troops out of that country. And I have no idea how they're going to do it or how they're financing it. But God bless them. God protect them. Say a prayer for their success. And it gives you hope, doesn't it? Fellow Americans saying we're not going to leave any of our brothers behind. Mm-mm. We're going to go in. We're going to do what it takes. If the government doesn't want to do it, we'll do it. So I say thank you on behalf of them. Thank you. You make me proud to be an American. The most frustrating thing about this whole ordeal, though, is that we keep getting told one thing, you know, and then something else happens, right? Or as was reported by JustNews.com, the president was supposed to report to Congress on what his plans were, but you know, he just waived that requirement and went ahead and did what he wanted to do anyway. So it's a mess. I thought we'd take a look at it. Why are we leaving $85 billion worth of military armament behind? There's talk of the administration funding the Taliban right now. As I was sharing a little bit earlier in the broadcast, you know, Congressman Gallagher from the state of Wisconsin, he demanded a plan from the Biden administration to bring Americans home. He wanted accountability for the equipment we left behind. He wanted transparency on the deals that they were going to strike. It got shot down. It got shot down. It was slammed by the House Democrats. They blocked that from passing. So we're in a mess on Capitol Hill here, too. Here for perspective, for clear analysis, is Dr. Paul Kengor, one of my favorites. I always appreciate his insights. He, of course, is the author of some great books. You might want to check out one of his latest. That's The Devil and Karl Marx. And, of course, he's a great professor. He hails from Grove City College there in Pennsylvania. Doctor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Good to be with you. And, the Pineapple Express and that whole Operation Recovery, they're doing amazing work, and it's probably because they don't have to answer to Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Mark Milley, and Anthony Blinken. They're freelancing, and that might be the key to success here in this case.
What a mess, though. I mean, you know, what an absolute fiasco, and then to come on and call this a success. What do you make of how the president handled it? And what he is now saying, how they are going forward on trying to, I guess, save face.
No, it's a shock. It's a complete fiasco. And I'm sitting here right now looking at pictures of American coffins in a mock funeral that the Taliban is holding in Kabul, with coffins draped with American flags, NATO flags, and British flags. It looks like something out of the Ayatollah in the Iranian Revolution in 1979. I mean, everything except, you know, giant billboards behind these flags saying "Great Satan, America." And so, I mean, this is hard to believe. This is really shocking. But here we are, Drew. In the next week and a half, we've got the 20th anniversary of September 11, 2001 coming up, and the Taliban flag will be flying over Kabul. And, I mean, you know, that is not what anyone expected in November 2001 when we went in with our troops and removed the Taliban from Afghanistan, which at that point they had been holding the country for 5 years. So now the Taliban is back, and remarkably, they have even more control now, more territory, than they had on September 11, 2001. And that's a tragic result, a direct consequence of removing, and this is important, people listen to this, removing a very small but highly successful contingent of American troops. These were not combat troops. These were American counterterrorism, counterinsurgency troops, and they had been doing amazing work keeping the peace there. And we didn't have a single U.S. combat casualty, combat death in 18 months. So these troops, 2,500, that was it. We've had troops for 70 years. Yep. In Japan, Korea, Germany, and the Philippines. This is what you do. You keep the troops there. We I don't know how many we have in Korea right now, maybe 30,000. Mm-hmm. We've had 50,000, 100,000 in South Korea from 1953 to the late 1990s, early 2000s. To keep 2,500 troops there, to keep the lid on a situation, not to win a war, but to prevent another 9/11, to prevent further terrorist groups from organizing there, planning there, plotting there, as they had before September 11th. And it's worse than before September 11th, Drew, because you didn't have ISIS and Al-Qaeda before September 11th. Now ISIS is there, Al-Qaeda is there. This is a fiasco. This is a disaster. And I'm sorry that this sounds partisan to people, but Joe Biden did this. Allow this to happen. I wouldn't have supported pulling troops if Donald Trump was president either. But the way that this was done, the way that they were removed, everything was done wrong. Marco Rubio said last week, we just gave the Taliban an air force. We gave them even more than that. This is an absolute disaster, and this should be universally condemned by everyone, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or whatever. This is an awful situation.
It made me sick. I saw footage of these Taliban fighters, right? These terrorists. They're there at the Kabul International Airport, right? They're on the tarmac there, and they're all clad in American uniforms. They're dressed like U.S. soldiers, right? And they're grinning and they're smiling. They're holding up all these weapons and they're standing in front of all this assorted, very sophisticated military paraphernalia that Allied forces, you know, left behind when they declared to the world, hey, Afghanistan is now under Afghan control. And then, of course, the Taliban took that over. And now they're thinking about recognizing the Taliban, and they're thinking about funding the Taliban or sending aid. I shouldn't say funding the Taliban, because they can argue that point. We can argue the point. They're there to help the Afghan people, but we know that that money goes to warlords. We know that the Taliban's in control. What do you think? What kind of reaction will there be if the administration starts sending money to Afghanistan? How do you parse that one? How do you keep it out of nefarious hands?
Yeah, well, I don't think you can. I think it's impossible. And, you know, the Taliban is just this mess of different terrorist group, different terrorist elements. And I've got to say this too. This was warned about by people from John McCain back in 2014. And Donald Trump, who I was very critical of this, when Trump said we were going to pull the troops out of Afghanistan, I said, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. But Trump has been out saying the last couple of weeks, and so has Mike Pompeo, that they would not have withdrawn the troops in this kind of way that would have created this. And I think they're right on that. And if I can, I'll read to you guys remarkable. This is Donald Trump in August 21st, 2017. All right, people, write it down. Look it up. Google it. August 21st, 2017. And Trump is speaking to our troops at Fort Myer in Virginia. And he warned this at the time. He said, the consequences of a rapid exit from Afghanistan are both predictable and unacceptable. 9/11, the worst terrorist attack in our history, was planned and directed from Afghanistan because that country was ruled by a government that gave comfort and shelter to terrorists. A hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum that terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, Trump was saying this about Afghanistan in 2017, would instantly fill, just as happened before September 11th. And he said this, Drew, and as we know, in 2011, America hastily and mistakenly withdrew from Iraq. As a result, our hard-won gains slipped back into the hands of terrorist enemies. Our soldiers watched as cities they had fought for and bled to liberate and won were occupied by a terrorist group called ISIS. The vacuum that we created by leaving Iraq too soon gave safe haven for ISIS to spread, grow, recruit, and launch attacks. And then Trump said, we cannot repeat in Afghanistan the mistakes that our leaders made in Iraq. Well, that's exactly what we've done. It's exactly what we've done. So when Donald Trump says, you know, sure, I wanted to withdraw troops, but not like this, not this kind of a withdrawal. The man is backed up by the things that he said, among other times, August 21st, 2017. So I got to lay this feet at the feet of Biden, Blinken, the Secretary of State, Mark Milley, and Kamala Harris, who advocated for this and pushed this and counseled this. You don't want Biden removed because Harris might be even more aggressive.
Where is she?
Doctor,
where is the vice president? I mean, she's been relatively AWOL. We don't hear much from her. There's no real leadership coming. She seems to be distancing herself from this whole debacle. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Last week, she was in Hanoi and Singapore. In fact, she was in Hanoi visiting a monument to John McCain, ironically.
Wow.
Of all things, where he was shot down, and she was there to reassure allies that they can count on the United States, which a lot of them at the time are probably thinking, oh, yeah? Really? I don't know what kind of a reassurance that is. So she's reassuring Singapore and Hanoi. Other people from the Biden administration are trying to reassure allies like Taiwan right now. And also you've got President Biden trying to reassure the Ukraine right now, in case Putin makes a move on the Ukraine. These reassurances are probably going to fall a little flat, given our track record of just what happened in of all places, Afghanistan.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Ukraine, let me go to Nevada. Stan is listening to us there. Stan, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Paul Kangor.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I worked 30 years for the National Guard, and two programs I was involved with was the Partnership for Peace, where we supported Ukraine, and the other one was on the border. And what really surprises me about what happened here, what leads me to think that Biden's supporting an agenda more than, protecting the American public, is that when Ukraine was invaded by Russia, or Crimea was annexed, all of a sudden, all Biden and Obama gave them were MREs and blankets. They would have loved to have all this $50 billion worth of equipment, but also having worked all those years working the border and working in the JIC and doing that intelligence, a lot of the information that protected that southwest border originated from Afghanistan and Iraq that protected this country. I don't see what's going to, I don't see us having, we're going to blind now. We're not going to get that to our law enforcement community, to the people protecting our border, because Biden's just said, take those eyes and ears out. We don't care.
Yep.
And that's what concerns me. And if I may just add this last thing,
sure,
is our credo in the military has always been no man left behind.
Amen.
Not 10%, not 2%, zero. That's all I have to say. Thank you for listening to me.
And Doctor, to that last point, I'll let you respond to him. He brought us some great points, but that last point was what really shocked me. I thought, and I've said this on the air numerous times now, that I really thought the Biden administration was just being political when they were saying, you know, our deadline is this date, and yes, we're going to get all of our troops out by then, and you know, Taliban didn't want any extension of that. And I thought, okay, they're just going to say that so the Taliban cooperate with them up to that point. But when we still have citizens and troops left behind, when we still have allies that are behind the lines, there's those who've helped us, we're not going to abandon them, especially Americans. We're going to push that line back. At least if I was president, I would. Yet I couldn't be more wrong. I'm surprised that Joe Biden and this administration, these military leaders, I mean, Biden had a son who served, that you would leave any American behind. How do you get your head around that?
Right. I know. And frankly, to be totally candid, I'm kind of surprised that they even withdrew the troops to begin with. Yeah, I thought it was more political rhetoric and something they probably wouldn't do. And in the case of Donald Trump, when Trump talked about withdrawing all the troops, I really sincerely thought, Drew, I thought he's not going to do that.
Yeah,
I had kind of learned with Trump, like when I was vocally and really against Trump in 2015, 2016, I had Polish friends calling me and saying, this madman, what's he going to do to Poland and NATO? Do you hear what he's saying about Poland and NATO? This is a Republican? You guys are going to nominate this guy? And I said, yeah, you can't nominate Trump. He can't abandon Poland. He can't abandon. And then he gets in the office, and he completely flipped on all of that stuff. He listened to his advisors who said, yeah, you've got to keep troops. You got to do this with NATO. You can't abandon Poland. So I thought if Trump gets a second term, we're not pulling out of Afghanistan because that would be insane. We're not gonna do that. But even then, Trump on these matters as chief executive on these foreign policy matters showed himself to be pretty competent.
Yeah.
And so if they were going to execute a withdrawal, I think they would have executed it far more effectively than what Joe Biden did. And the caller, he makes some great points there.
Crimea.
Not only do you leave Afghanistan and turn it over to the Taliban, but you leave your bases. You leave the airports that you built. You lose an area from which to go into other parts of the Middle East and other areas. If you went through a list of 100 different things just from a military strategic perspective that's bad about this, you and I could talk for 3 or 4 hours just going through that checklist.
Yep.
This is a disaster in so many ways.
Maggie, grab the clip of Joe Biden when he was candidate Biden. You talk about the promises he made in his position and how things have changed. Here's what he said when he was running against Donald Trump for the presidency. All right, as Maggie's getting that queued up, Maggie, let me know when you have that ready, and we'll go ahead and try to fire that. Do you have it? All right, she's worked. All right, she's got it. There we go. Let's run this. All right, we can wait on it, Max. It's all right. It's okay. You know, Maggie is a new producer on the show, as you know, Doc, and we're working on a few kinks, but she's doing great, and she's got some great audio for you, too. Get Congressman Gallagher's audio, too, Maggie, if you could. And let me do this. Let me take a few calls, and then I have to take a short break coming up here in a moment. We'll go to Roddy, who's listening in Illinois, Doctor. Roddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Good afternoon, Dr. Kanger. Enjoying the program. Always like when Dr. Kanger's on, but I have
Thank
to respectfully
you.
Disagree. We need to get our troops out of the Middle East, out of Europe, out of Sub-Saharan Africa. The existential threat, the threat to our very existence in the world, stems from China, not from Afghanistan. And we need to cultivate Russia as an ally, like Nixon cultivated China as an ally to counter the Soviet Union. And Ukraine, 40% of Ukrainians consider themselves Russians, and they live in the eastern part of Ukraine. So that's a very divided society. It's not a nation state. So we need to focus on China, number one, China, number two, and China, number three.
All right. Hey, Roddy, thank you. I'll let Doctor respond to you.
Well, this is not going to help us with China. I'll tell you that. And also, it's one thing to say we got to get out of there. We shouldn't have been there. But as president, you know, you're left with a situation. You're left with a scenario. And whether you believe that should have done what it would have been done in 2001 or 2002 or whatever, when you come into office and you look at the situation in Afghanistan, we had only 2,500 people there, and we had not lost a soldier there in 18 months. We had achieved stability, and the goal of this was not to go over there to win a war or whatever. It's to prevent another 9/11. The way the 9/11 happened was that Osama bin Laden and the hijackers, they were there getting safe haven and protection in Afghanistan under the Taliban from 1996 to 2001. They were able to train there, organize there, do everything that they could. They were protected there. That's what they were able to do. When we went in and removed the Taliban, it was to stop that kind of organization and plotting from happening again. Okay, but now that we're completely out, we've got an even worse hornet's nest. And so you now again have all the preconditions set for them to create more 9/11s. In fact, probably something even worse, because now of all things, ISIS is there.
Yeah.
ISIS didn't even exist in 2001. So you have to deal prudently with the situation that you got. And you know, none of us want any of our troops, any of our boys, any of our sons and daughters really anywhere outside the United States. But the fact is, I mean, we've had them in Korea since 1950.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, right? I mean, we've had them in Japan since 1945.
We're still in Germany.
The Philippines.
We're still in Germany.
Yeah, they're still there. Yeah. Right.
Hey, you know, to Roddy's point, I mean, okay, they want our troops out. A lot of people, who wants war? You know, nobody wants war. We want our troops. It would be great if the world was peaceful. One thing in President Biden's speech the other day that resonated actually a little bit with me, and I'm sure it'll resonate with a lot of Americans. I totally disagree with how the departure was handled. I totally disagree with leaving an American behind. He talked about the cost. And, of course, we know he left $85 billion worth of weaponry behind. And now they're talking about spending money to perhaps, support, it'll be the Taliban, but supposedly help the Afghans. But listen to what he said yesterday in a speech, just about the amount of money that was being spent per day on this war.
When I was running for president, I made a commitment to the American people that I would end this war. Today, I've honored that commitment. It was time to be honest with the American people again. We no longer had a clear purpose in an open-ended mission in Afghanistan. After 20 years of war in Afghanistan, I refused to send another generation of America's sons and daughters to fight a war that should have ended long ago. After more than $2 trillion spent in Afghanistan, a cost that researchers at Brown University estimated would be over $300 million. Yes.
$300 million? And what did he say? We were spending a million something a day. I don't know if there was more of that audio, Maggie, that you didn't play for us. But, Doctor, there is a point there. I mean, there's a lot of U.S. dollars, a lot of treasure that was spent there. There's a lot of people who were glad to be out of it. Of course, the problem that came down was the debacle that ultimately ensued and the citizens that were left behind. Congressman Gallagher from the state of Wisconsin, he tried to pass a piece of legislation where he wanted some accountability. He had a bill that would demand from the Biden administration that we bring Americans home and that there was an accountability of all that we left behind militarily and a transparency in the deals. What do you think is going to come from this? And your thoughts on the amount of money that has been spent and where we go now?
Well, I'm just flabbergasted to hear Joe Biden talk about spending money, right?
Right.
I mean, he suddenly cares about spending money. I mean, the money is rolling off the printing presses in Washington, D.C., unlike anything we've ever seen, right? Relief package after relief package. I mean, I'm glad to see he finally cares about money. This is the first time I've heard him say anything positive about spending money. It's kind of like, yeah, he tore up every agreement that Donald Trump did, every appointment that Trump made, but all of a sudden he's completely has hand tied by Trump's one agreement on Afghanistan, right? I don't believe that at all. And also, I get tired of him referring to it as a war, as a 20-year war. By that argument, then we're into a 70-year war with Korea, right? And in fact, Little Kim tore up the armistice just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So are we back in a war? And the cost of what we've spent to stay in Korea, and a lot of those costs too with Afghanistan were the initial cost, the investment cost. But we had reached a point. We weren't actively in a hot war. I mean, it's always volatile. It's always different. I mean, the guys over there aren't playing cards, right? I mean, they've got to constantly keep their guard up. But we were down to a 2,500 person contingent force. There was counterinsurgency, counterterrorism. And it's not like 50,000 troops in South Korea, or whatever we have there now, 30,000, whatever it is. So I don't like the way Biden is playing this. It's a very short-sighted way of looking at it, and I think a lot of the way that he's framing this is political propaganda and trying to save face.
All right, let me grab Kathy, who's been waiting in Illinois to join the conversation. Kathy, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Kangor.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy, go right ahead.
So the only comment I have, and I agree with Dr. Kangor completely, and I look at how reckless and thoughtless, foolish, lacking of any compassion, any wisdom this pullout was in Afghanistan, and I don't even think I have to make a case. But I have to wonder what is behind it, because I don't believe what I'm hearing. I don't think anyone could have accidentally done this. I do believe that there is some kind of ulterior motive or some type of plan that we are not aware of, that we pulled out of Afghanistan in this manner, because it makes no logical sense.
I have to agree with you. It makes no sense. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, and I got to say, too, the Biden administration could be very competent when it wanted to in Afghanistan. In fact, they made sure that the gay pride flag flew the entire month of June outside of our embassy in Kabul. They celebrated Gay Pride Month. Mark Milley was back in the United States talking about diversity in the military. Friends of mine, I had a friend who gets into the VFW, an email alert. He's a veteran of Okinawa. He's 94 years old. And the guy was aghast. Almost every email that he got had to do with gay people in the military. Mm-hmm. Milley's talking about critical race theory, and Anthony Blinken and our ambassadors over in Kabul, they made sure that they had that flag flying. And I know I got an email from somebody who was there, and I'm not going to say who. I can't use names, but somebody who said to me, "Do you have any idea how much flying a gay pride flag angers the people of Afghanistan, traditional Muslims, not just the Taliban, but traditional Muslims? You know, they are completely against those sort of Western values, right? Or Western views. And, you know, Afghanistan, the Taliban is vicious toward gay people, very cruel. They execute homosexuals. They literally push walls over on top of them. And doing things like that in a country like that is simply going to antagonize them even more. And it's even, and this is my friend's point, it's even going to alienate traditional moderate Muslims who don't support the Taliban.
I know.
So they could be very competent when they wanted to over there, right? But then they would turn around and give a list of all the Americans there in Afghanistan over to the enemy. So it's just shocking. Yeah. It really is.
Kathy, I hope there's not more than meets the eye, but there's no logical explanation for what we've seen. Hey, Doctor, thank you. Always great to talk with you here. Catch up with you at the break here. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, our conversation will continue. Stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your life.
Your life.
Your values. Connected.
Connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, great to be with you today. Hey, if you missed any of the conversation throughout the day, relevantradio.com. Go to my podcast, do a search for the Drew Mariani Show, and follow us at Drew Mariani Show. And you can do that on Facebook as well. It's always good to be there. Follow me personally at Drew Mariani as well. It's good to talk with you. Look, last week I spoke with His Excellency Archbishop Cordiglione of San Francisco, and you know he talked about a group called Roots of Peace. Great organization. It really is. It's a wonderful organization. They're an organization that clears landmines out of former war zones. I mean, that's one heck of a job, right? And they do that so the land can be used to help the people, so people can grow crops. And over the last several years in Afghanistan and in other locations, they've exported about 160,000 metric tons of fruits and nuts and spices valued at more than $350 million to international markets. And that had a profound impact, right? Impacting more than a million farmers there. But they have right now about 360 employees in Afghanistan, and they can't get these employees out. And they were writing directly to the president in the middle of last month. They explained their plight. This is before the evacuation. This was last month. They're saying, hey, we've got all these people here that are, you know, with our organization. Can you help us out? None of those employees made it out. I'm joined right now by the CEO of Roots of Peace, which you can find if you go to the website, rootsofpeace.org. Okay. And Heidi Kuhn joins me right now. She just returned from Istanbul. And boy, she has a story to tell. Heidi, thanks for joining me. Good to talk with you.
No, thank you so much for the honor.
So tell me what happened. You just got back from Istanbul. What's going down?
Mm-hmm. Well, Roots of Peace started our work in Afghanistan 20 years ago with a vision of turning mines to vines, replacing the scourge of landmines with bountiful vineyards and orchards, and most importantly, providing export across contentious borders as a business model for peace. We're doubling and tripling the income to poppies and providing alternative agricultural crops nationwide. We are in the midst of the harvest. Afghanistan's a country 80% dependent upon agriculture, so we are focused on the harvest, a harvest of hope. Nature doesn't wait for peace treaties to be signed, and we're boots on the ground. But the fall of the of Afghanistan on the 15th of August created an emergency for us in the midst of the harvest, and that was the safety of our Afghans. Now, we had 75 of those 360 employees who were most at risk, and those are the women's gender programs and people who really put their reputation and their hearts out there to support Americans. So we have been working very hard with SIVs, special immigration visas, but we realized it was getting so hard that my husband, Gary, and I flew to Istanbul, Turkey, because we wanted to be on the front line of peace over there, peace meaning getting these Afghans safely out. So we entered their time zone with a crisis management and filling out the proper forms required by the U.S. Embassy, the State Department. They changed constantly, and we were there to pull our 75 most vulnerable Afghans and one American baby out of Afghanistan.
Wow, unbelievable. So just give me a perspective, to give all of us a perspective. You know, the employees were Afghans. I'm assuming they're Americans over there, maybe a combination of both. Were they able to make it to the airport at all? And do you have any idea where these people are right now?
Yeah. Well, it was a well-planned operation. We provided what's called a manifest to the U.S. Embassy, and those were the names, addresses, you know, everything detailed. And we were given permission to go there to the gates. It was the South Gate, and I hired a bus of 76, of course, Afghans on that bus. And you have to imagine, you know, there's no toilets. We're living in COVID in a country that has no vaccines. And the perimeter of the airport is surrounded by the Taliban. So they drove on the 27th of August, well coordinated, to those gates and stayed there for 10 hours. There were 55 buses waiting 10 hours. And at the very end, all the buses were told to go back. Wow. And it was heartbreaking for the risk that they took. Yeah. But we did it again on the 28th. We went and another surge. It was well coordinated. But there really, quite frankly, was just drew so much chaos and lack of communication. And as the buses were there, there was an ISIS K alert. And you know, if that isn't on top of it. So at that 10th hour, again, I instructed the buses to leave immediately. And just 10 minutes later, you heard in the news, the drone was dropped within the 1 mile radius of where those children and loyal employees were. So it's been one of the most stressful and challenging times in my professional career. It was really Schindler's List I had to make of who goes and who doesn't.
That's horrible. How do you do that? Yeah, you must be so frustrated. I know you've reached out to the administration. You wrote directly to President Biden. You wrote, I understand as well, to the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, back in July about guidance on the laws the Taliban were already advancing. Did you hear back from the administration at all? I mean, who got back to you? What was the word?
Well, you know, actually, Speaker Pelosi has been extremely helpful. Talking to their office two and three times a day, she put Wendy Parker, her chief of staff, dedicated to Roots of Peace, and I talked to her, again, two or three times daily. We all thought we had this mission down. And again, the 11th hour, something way beyond our control, and that was the ISIS-K emergency alert when these people were there, you know, right there on the front line. You know, there was one American baby. There were 19 other green card holders who wanted to come back to Sacramento, California, but they couldn't. So because those lists were given to the hands of the Taliban, which everyone thought they would proceed inside the gates and be airlifted, the Taliban has those aims. And that is our most serious concern right now for Roots of Peace. And I'm doing everything that I can within my means to mobilize and get them to safety.
Heidi, how can we help you? I have about a minute or two left for you, and I just want to give you the final words here. What can we do to help, especially those trapped, and help your efforts?
Yes. Well, you can certainly donate. And we, you know, I've never put out such a call to action. You know, we need the financial resources to help these people immediately at rootsofpeace.org. And in addition to that, there's 500,000 IDPs, internally displaced people, lining the streets of Kabul. They were so afraid of the Taliban. They're sleeping on the dirt without tents, without water, without blankets, without food. And because I have those 360 Afghans, they are mobilizing and providing those emergency, you know, to the people who most deserve it on the ground. And many of the other organizations are not there anymore. We are, because it's Roots of Peace. So please join us and plant the roots of peace in Afghanistan.
Well, I'll tell you, keep up your good work. I know you're going to be blessed for doing so. The website is rootsofpeace.org. That's rootsofpeace.org. My thanks to Heidi Kuhn. She is the CEO of that great organization, doing wonderful work. Heidi, we'll catch up again soon, all right?
Thank you for your prayers. Thank you so much for your prayers.
Have a great day, everyone.